This is Mental, the podcast that destigmatizes mental health. I'm Bobby Timms.
I'm Annie Harris.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about self-love with returning guest, Olivia Callahan.
My bae, Olivia.
She was so popular on our previous episode that we got her back right away to record not only another episode, but also an episode around really what she's best known for. As someone that goes by self-love live online, self-love seems the ultimate topic to target with her. So before we get into that, I've got a few stats. First off, from a study by Alexandra Dallas Abrams. One of the findings of this study was that low self-esteem has been linked to violent behaviour, school dropout rates, teenage pregnancy, suicide, and low academic achievement. What I really like about this study in particular is so often people acknowledge these kind of links, how our feelings about ourselves, and particularly when those are negative, can influence the sort of choices we make or the situations mm-hmm. we find ourselves in. But this mm-hmm. study I found really powerful in actually evidencing that.
So I find that so interesting that there's still this denial going on that mental health or mental health problems exist, when we've got like low self-esteem is causing things like violence, teenage pregnancies, all these sort of things going up and up and up. And yet still it's like, no, this, we have this like message that no, it's just people that are inherently bad, or like it's just that people are stupid or whatever. But what I think is really easy to forget is that people make money out of us being miserable. And those sorts of people are usually the sorts of people who are investing in things like newspapers, for example. So this denial that mental health problems exist really is, to me, really strong evidence to the fact that people make money out of us being miserable, and they continue to push that message that there's something else going on. And there are studies to confirm this, you know. We're even handing over these studies saying, this is a thing. Nope. It's actually like sort of like fingers in the ears, like emu with its head in the sand. Is it an emu? Ostrich. That's what I'm not an emu. They're like the same thing, right? I'm sorry if I've offended any emus out there. I'm not racist, but ostriches and emus look the same. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds like we've got a new theme of this week's Annie conspiracy.
Yes, populations and conspiracies. It's Annie's conspiracy corner.
I do get what you're saying, though, and I don't really have anything to add to it, to be honest. So we'll move right along.
Because I'm amazing.
A few more stats. In particular, the stats we found were really shocking to do with how self-esteem influences women. And we can go into theories on that in a moment. But first off, we've got some stats from the Dove Global Girls Beauty and Confidence Report from 2017. First up, they found that 9 in 10 girls in the UK will not spend time with family and friends, participate in activities outside the house, or try out for a team or club if they aren't happy with the way they look. They also found 75% of 8 to 9-year-olds said they like their look. That figure dropped to 56% among girls aged 12 to 13. So that one in particular I found really shocking, that in the matter of a few years, the confidence of girls in their appearance has dropped by almost a quarter.
That's insane. What's happening in those 3 years, 4 years?
Well, that's it. I think that's why these sort of stats are so important, because it's easy to think that some people grow up and have issues with their confidence, and that that's nothing to do with anyone else or society. But I think really that's trying to shy away from the issues, because that is coming from somewhere. And these girls from those kind of ages are in school, are around their peer group, and there's a lot of things being put on girls from a very young age, in particular in terms of their looks. And in terms of, to a certain extent, their value being in their looks, which I don't think is put on guys to the same extent, to any extent, yeah, really. And so that first stat, 9 out of 10 girls in the UK would not spend time, and then with, they mentioned, with friends, doing activities, trying out for teams. Again, these are all things that potentially they'd be doing at school, and it seems that that must be coming from somewhere. Is it that when they see friends, their friends are judging them based on how they look against what they see on social media or what they see on the TV, where people have, you know, makeup done just before the cameras roll and everything is touched up? Or let's say they want to be in a choir and their appearance coming into the judging process, even though it should be about their voice.
What did really resonate with me was the thing about not trying out for teams and trying activities, because I can relate super heavily to that. Like, I mean, well, I'm 28 years old now, and I literally went to a bodyweight class yesterday, and I was in a real grump. Like, I mean, I know I host this, and I'm always like out and proud about like how I'm managing my mental health, but I'm still a human. I still have body stuff. I still have anxiety. I still have depression. Like, I still live with it. And literally just yesterday, I stood in front of the mirror and everyone's warming up and stretching, and I could just, all I could think about was just about like how much I hate my body. And it's so dumb. Like, it's so dumb, because I know that my body's capable of such incredible things. And I know that, but I just don't think I appreciate it or believe it like quite in the right way.
Mm.
You know? And then I was sort of thinking, oh, well, what don't I like about my body? And it's like really small. Like, I mean, I have like a spare tire around my middle, and like there's some extra fat around my jaw. But like, I pretty much like, I like how I like my arms look. I like my legs. I like my butt. You know, I like my face. I love my hair. Like, you know, I have so many things that I like about my body, but those two things within my body just absolutely like shifted my day and shifted my evening and how I felt about myself and how much I pushed myself during that class as well. Because I was like, I was really much in that mindset of, well, I hate my body, so there's no point trying to do anything nice for it, you know?
Right.
And it sucked. It really sucked.
But isn't it curious how you had a whole list of things you liked and yet just two things you named that you don't like, and yet those are the things you're focusing on?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a weird double standard that men and women have as well in terms of the kind of expectations on us. Because I think for guys, it's a lot easier to go to like a gym class and you're going there to work on your body. So it's less important how you come in. Yet for some reason, women are already meant to be presenting their best side before they even get in the room.
Yeah. Oh my God, there was this girl at the gym today. She was dressed like, top half was dressed like Jodie Marsh. Do you ever see that picture of Jodie Marsh literally wearing just two belts as a top over her nipples?
No.
Yeah, you need to Google it. Sports bra she was wearing. I was like, I hope you're not planning on doing any like high impact cardio in that, because your nips are going to fly away. They are gone.
Yeah, so that's my point really, is that it seems odd that women looking a certain way seems to almost be viewed as a entry requirement for physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I, whilst there is still pressure on men as well,
for sure,
I don't think anyone really would look twice at a larger man going into a gym. They'd be like, oh, well, he's in a gym, checks out.
And yeah. Or like maybe even not consciously, but like subconsciously, that's something that's just so drilled into us, to be like, the fact that a woman is larger is more of a problem than the fact that a man is larger.
Yeah. It's weird. And it's again, I think, comes back to that idea of women's value being placed in their appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas so often for men, it's enough for us to be successful, or it's enough for us to be intelligent.
Sure.
Because there's some ugly, ugly guys out there with beautiful wives. Gives me such hope. No, it's true though, isn't it?
The tea is brisk today.
So we'll get into the interview with Liv in a few moments. I think it's turned out brilliantly. She's such an insight. And I think she's a great example as well of not only someone that's really conquered this concept of self-love and is an example to others, but also she's done it through social media, which I think is extra impressive. And so my last stat for that is regarding the internet and social media and how commonly that's a factor in our lives now. Because we've acknowledged on previous episodes how there's a lot of this comparison online, particularly places like Instagram, which is our biggest platform. And so I've got a stat from the Royal Society for Public Health. Daily or almost daily use of the internet has risen rapidly in the last decade. In 2006, just 35% of people in the UK used the internet on a daily basis. This figure has now climbed to 82% of people in 2016 when the study ended. Yeah. So I think that is a great way of illustrating how, however it is that social media is affecting our lives, our self-love, our mental health, it's something that's increasingly in our lives and in our lives increasingly often.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, we'll get into the episode with Liv in just a moment. But first,
this week's Audible recommendation.
I'm recommending Body Positive Power by Megan J. Crabb, aka Body Positive Panda, and it's the best book to try and get into self-love and self-acceptance. If you want to try this book for free, follow the link bit.ly/mentalbooks. Details for this book are in the description box. Hello, I am Liv, also known as Self-Love Liv Online, mainly Instagram. And my self-love journey began back in, 2016? Yes, 2016. And I became obsessed with the idea that I could love myself for who I am, and that was enough. And that to me is magical.
Mm-hmm. And so prior to that, we did another episode with you where we talked about your mental health journey overall. With all of that in mind, where did it first become evident to you how important self-love could be in your recovery?
I think it's because my teenage years were spent literally hating myself to the core. And there comes a point in your mental health journey where you think, you know what, I'm so tired of hating myself. There's got to be more to life than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking at accounts online, such as Body Positive Panda, who was just like the most magical human being in the world, who just loved herself. I was like, I want that. I want that passion for myself. And I've started to develop more happier trains of thoughts rather than this whole horrible negative thoughts in my mind. And that was the beginning.
Yeah, that's really brilliant to hear. Thanks. And I love her too. I also find
she's amazing. Yeah, I love her so much.
So in terms of those early days, what was that like? What were the kind of thoughts and the criticisms you had of yourself?
Oh God, it was everything. I literally was so critical of everything I ever did, like my walk, the way I spoke. It became so silly to me that literally the littlest thing I did was not good enough. And I could literally have a conversation with someone and say one thing and that'd be done. I'd be so critical of myself. I'd hate myself. I'd feel so terrible. And now I'm like, yeah, you know what? I am who I am.
Well, that's it, because so often you can obsess over these things in the past.
Oh, God, yeah.
You can't change anything about them. And that's when, you know, it starts getting into sort of anxiety territory, yeah, where you're being anxious about being anxious and you're overthinking a scenario. And whilst that's understandable that people go through that, it doesn't actually change anything about the situation.
No, it doesn't. That's what I've learned. Like, worry is such a pointless emotion because, end of the day, it doesn't change the situation.
Mm, for sure. And that's something that I find really interesting in terms of learning from people the kind of worries they have.
Yeah.
And particularly when it comes to self-love and self-criticism, some of the things can seem so random.
Yeah, but to us it's huge.
Yeah.
But to the person that you're with, they don't notice it.
Yeah.
They think it's just a cute thing about you, but to you it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, that's right. It fascinates me. We had an episode previously on body confidence, and Rebecca, the guest for that one, was saying she used to be really insecure about her nose.
Yeah.
And I remember just looking at her and being like, but why?
But why?
I was like tilting my head, trying to work out what was wrong with her nose.
Yeah, trying to find the flaw.
But when you're in it, it's a massive deal.
Definitely, yeah.
And I've definitely had plenty of those things myself. You know, I used to be really insecure about my elbows, and I mentioned that on that episode. Yeah, I thought they were kind of too bony because of how skinny the rest of me is.
Oh my god!
And it can seem so random looking back on it now, but that was such a big deal at the time.
It's a huge deal, yeah.
Yeah, and still, I think subconsciously that does inform partly like how I choose clothes and stuff. It still feels weird wearing short sleeves because I've just never worn short sleeves.
Haven't I?
So were there any specific things you had where you look back on those now and you think, that's so weird that I was worried about?
Oh, God, yeah, loads. There's one particular one I remember. It's my legs. Like, the way I walk, I'm quite pigeon-toed. Mm-hmm. So my feet go in. And I was so self-conscious of people looking at my feet. I literally would barely leave the house. If I walked, I walk, like, a different way. Because I felt my own walk was so random and so weird. People think that I was weird. It sounds ridiculous, I know, but to me it's like a huge deal.
But it makes sense. I can understand the logic in that, even if it was exaggerated.
Yeah.
So are you saying then when you chose different ways to walk, that was so you wouldn't walk past the same
people? No, it's like I'd move my feet differently.
Oh, I see.
So I'd feel so uncomfortable because my feet are not so used to being in a pigeon, to being like a pigeon-toed scenario. Mm-hmm. If I walk like normally, it really hurts.
Mm.
I'll do it because that's the norm. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's it. And I have a personal crusade against the word normal. I would much rather rebrand it as average.
What is normal?
Because average doesn't sound as attractive.
Yeah, average.
I'm
yeah.
no interest in being average.
Average sounds as boring in a way.
But that's what it is. It's there is no normal. The nearest we could have is a sort of average of most people are in the middle, their feet are this certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't say anything about everyone else.
Exactly, yeah.
With that, was that something you were able to overcome at the time? Like, what was the process of dealing
with that? I realised that there's more to life than worrying about my feet. And people would come up and my friends would always say I had a really like, cute walk. That kind of changed my mindset about it and made me think, you know what? I do have a cute walk. Mm. It's quirky. It's unusual. It's me. Why should I change who I am for someone else's benefit?
Absolutely. And there's no winning in that anyway. Particularly when it comes to anything physical, there's always going to be some new trend.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's no point trying to keep up with that because you'll want your body to be a certain shape or you'll want to wear a certain clothes and then it goes out of fashion again and then you have to change.
And you're back to square one, yeah.
I mean, I think the greatest thing I've learned through my time modelling is that actually everything comes back into fashion eventually.
Yeah, I've noticed that. How weird is that?
So you just stick it out and then you wait long enough and then you're ahead of the curve
back
again.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's a really interesting one with you because I'd never even noticed that about your walk.
Exactly, people don't. But to me, it's like a huge issue that I have. But to an everyday person, they're like, it doesn't even occur to them mm-hmm. to think of that.
And yet, it's funny as well with our minds how these things, the fixation on them, can bias us as well.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm assuming when you were thinking more intensely in that way, if anyone ever mentioned anything about your walk, you really focus on
that. Oh my God, that was me done.
Yeah, because it justifies that way of thinking.
Yes.
Well, they've said it, so I know it's real now.
That's real. Yeah. That's me done. Oh my God, what do I do? The panic sets in, the emotions come through. It's really hard if you think about it too much. That's it.
And you start taking that one person's opinion as that's everyone.
Everyone's exactly. thinking they're that, the higher person. That's the main opinion of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
And so in terms of then changing that, I think that's why it's so important that it has to come from you.
Definitely, yeah.
That unless you address these underlying feelings of whatever it can be, a fixation, a shame, a guilt, a worry, unless you address that yourself,
yeah,
you're always going to be able to find someone that's going to say a thing and drag you right back into that.
Completely agree, yeah.
Do you have a particular process for overcoming such a thing?
Normally, I think in the last, I'd say in the last 2 years or so, I've developed this, I don't know if I can, swear on here?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've developed this, I don't give a fuck about other people's opinions, but my own attitude. Because, end of the day, I'm who I am, and if you don't like it, that's a you problem. That's not my concern. I've had so many people in the past be negative towards me and about my body, about my face, about whatever. That's really got to me. And now I'm just like, well, that's a you problem.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with me, pal. Like, I am who I am. I think I'm great.
I think you're great.
Thanks. I think I'm a little weird, a little quirky, but that's who I am. That's fine. If you don't like that, then you deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
You deal with that.
Absolutely, and that's something I can relate to a lot. It's something that my counsellor has said to me a few times, is that you can't control other people's thoughts and feelings.
Exactly.
And it's worth me being reminded of that, because the sort of person I am, I'm quite perfectionist and I really worry about how I come across.
Yeah.
And so I'm in that weird in between where I've done loads of work on my confidence and my self-love and loving my appearance and all these things have been an uphill battle, but I'm so much better now, and yet I'm still holding on to this perfectionism that I feel great about me, but I'm still worried about how other people perceive it.
I have this fear of not being liked. So if someone's like me, I'm like, why? What am I doing wrong? And even though I've come to a point in my life where I do really like myself, if someone doesn't like me, I'm still like, oh, but why? What have I done wrong? And normally it's over nothing, but in my head, the thoughts will come back. I'll start to kind of overthink things and worry and panic. And I need to learn to not care as much about what other people, if people don't like me. Yeah, you know?
I love that. Yeah. And then in terms of that, it's a funny paradox, isn't it, that you can feel really confident about yourself but still worry about how you come across to people.
Definitely, yeah.
And do you think that worrying about how you come across has influenced your recovery and mental health as well?
I think so, yeah. I think it has, yeah, because, I mean, before I kind of came fully into recovery, I was still having the negative thoughts and into the negative, like, mindset. And I was really into, like, self-harm and I was into my bulimia. And when I became into recovery, I realised that the people around you as well influence you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you can be so living with yourself, but if people around you aren't as positive as you are, you're on a downhill spectrum.
Yeah, that's very true. A good friend often says to me that you end up being more and more like the five people you spend the most time
with. Yeah.
And so a lot of this journey in terms of self-love is about you and your own perceptions, but sometimes that does mean moving past.
It does, yeah, exactly. It does. If they're not benefiting you in any way, cut them loose. If they're really not worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
I sound really brutal then, sorry.
No, but I think that's so important.
Cut them loose!
So that's like the missing step, isn't it? What we talked about with having these worries over how people perceive you.
Yeah.
That you need to a certain extent, take ownership of that too.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
this is also part of the same issue, the same thing I need to work on.
Yep.
And some people are going to be a lost cause in that.
Exactly.
And that's not actually, again, that's not really about them any more than how they perceive you is about you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's better for both of you that you're apart.
Exactly.
Because it's not healthy for them to continue thinking of you in a negative way.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit anyone.
Yeah, and the more you build your own self-confidence and self-love, the less they're going to be able to relate to you.
Exactly.
And think you've changed.
Yes, I got that a lot. Yeah, you've changed the person. Like, no, I've just grown as a person.
And was there any you've had to take out of your life?
Yes, definitely. I won't mention any names because you never know who's listening. It was a bad energy all around. So there was one day I thought, you know what, I deserve more than this. I can't continue this lifestyle of negativity anymore. So I was like, snip, snip, snip.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I felt so much brighter and lighter and just better myself since I've cut them loose. If it benefits you in any way possible, can't do it
for sure.
Mm.
And that's something I talk quite a bit about with friends and family is this idea of being in congruence with yourself and being in congruence with the world.
Yeah.
And I think from a very early age, I was very conscious of how potentially damaging my self-image was.
Yeah.
And that to a certain extent, I needed to change that for my own survival.
Exactly. Yeah.
From a very young age, I knew that I wasn't going to easily fit in.
Yeah.
I knew that I could, but adults would ask me, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd have a list and I'd be told, oh, no, you can only have one answer. Oh. Can only be one thing.
Yeah.
And luckily, however that worked out, I had enough insight to know that that wasn't true. And I saw people that were all these different things in the media. And I think actually that seems to be increasing. There's more and more pop stars that are now also in movies or having perfumes or makeup
books
ranges.
Out. Yeah.
And so the world is changing in that way. They talk about having like a portfolio career.
Yep.
And now being self-employed, that's 100% the life I'm living.
Yeah.
But I think from an early age, I knew that I needed to be my own advocate in order to survive and get to where I am now.
You need to be your own cheerleader.
Yeah. It's so important. And so I'm really glad to be in that place. I'm in congruence with me, but in terms of being in congruence with the world, sometimes you need to work on your positioning.
100%, yeah.
Because with that friend that you mentioned, it's two-sided. On one hand, there's the fact that you need the more positive people around you, but also you're trying to reconcile their negative views.
Yeah.
And so if they keep saying these negative things about you, then if you keep them around, you're going to keep asking yourself, oh, well, could they be on to something?
Exactly. You start to believe the thoughts and believe what they're saying as well.
Yeah, because it's a compromise.
There's, exactly.
It's not natural for us to have friends that we're polar opposites with.
Yeah.
And I have good friends that I have quite different views with some things on.
Yeah.
And that's fine. We don't talk about that.
Yeah. We don't mention that.
Yeah, but it's, for some people, it's possible and other people it's not.
Like, say if they don't have the same music taste as you, they're not a bad person. If they think that you're...
Well, it depends on the music.
You know what? I backtrack then, yeah. If it's about your body or your image, that's personal to you.
Hmm.
I feel like if someone mentions something negative about you as a person, that's a whole different spectrum.
Yeah. I feel like the slogan for that could be, your self-worth isn't up for debate.
I like that. That could be the tagline.
Mm. So in terms of that journey, then you went from having a lot of these negative thought patterns and now you're in a much healthier place.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You go by self-love, live.
I do indeed.
And so you have to live up to that title.
I do, yeah. It's a lot of pressure. I do it.
And so do you still find that those things come along now?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm not going to lie and say I don't have bad days anymore, because I do.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I handle them is so much different from back then. Before, I literally would be like, right, that's it, they're all true. But now those thoughts don't have to be actions.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to believe the thoughts, because sometimes there's bad thoughts. You have good thoughts and bad thoughts. The bad thoughts come and go. They will pass.
Mm-hmm. And to slightly change topic, in terms of your experience, you have bipolar, I don't. To what extent do those episodes affect being self-love?
Oh, it's hard. I never think. So on Instagram, I vowed to be as real and as authentic as possible, because if I was promoting happiness every day, it wouldn't be real.
Mm-hmm.
With bipolar disorder, you don't get a day where you're like, I'm amazing, I'm perfect, I'm wonderful, because that's not real. There are days I have where I'm so low, I don't get out of bed. And that's okay. You know, these things happen. But when it comes to being self-love live, it's a weird saying that, I think it's best to be as open and as honest as possible, because I do love myself. My mental illness doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard, like, battle to be involved in.
Yeah, it's really tricky. That's something where I try as hard as I can to love every part of me, including the mental illness.
Yes, and that's hard.
Try and turn it into somehow a superpower, and hopefully things like having the podcast are a way that can give me an insight I wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah.
But it's it is an ongoing battle, and it's not a coincidence that people relate to you when you are being real like that, because if all you were shining is every day's bliss,
exactly, it's not real.
I'm completely recovered, everything's fine now.
Yeah.
People, A, wouldn't be able to relate to it.
Exactly.
But also, it wouldn't teach them anything.
No.
Because it's not real. And there's no coincidence that when, it doesn't matter what reality TV show you watch, they always try and get to the real emotion.
Yeah.
We're not going to watch something where it's just all smiles all day.
We'd hate it.
I think it would send me a bit insane. Like, yeah. It would feel like Cartoon Network all over
again. Oh, no. Yeah.
Do you find, in terms of your bipolar episodes, is there a kind of difference in terms of when you're more manic or when you're more depressive in terms of these thought patterns? Do they take a different form?
So when I'm depressed, the thoughts will be very negative, very like self, almost selfish, because all I think is I'm awful, I'm terrible, I'm the worst human being in the world. When I'm manic, it's the polar opposite. I'm amazing, I'm fantastic, I'm brilliant, I can't do anything. And there's a middle ground where I'm like, you know what, I'm all right. And that's where I want to be. That's where I'm at the moment. That's where I want to stay. But the manic thoughts, I can handle in a way because they're quite nice. But they're still dangerous because you do think you're invincible.
Yes.
And that you can take on anything or anyone. Watching the past has got me into a bit of trouble. But yeah.
Do you mind sharing?
Not at all, no. So basically, whenever I'm manic, and I used to drink quite heavily, I'm sober now, I would go out and I'd drink a lot, and I'd feel like I can't get anyone or anything. Mm-hmm. I get into arguments. I get into like almost fights because I was so like, you can't touch me, I'm invincible. And that was so dangerous to do because I'm not invincible. I'm a human being. One punch and I'm out. You know, that's it. Me done.
Yeah. And would you agree that's one of the really difficult things with bipolar is that you mentioned there the being the manic side, the depressive side, and then you try and stay in the middle.
Yeah.
Because in the middle is the real you, right?
It's safe, yeah. That's real me, exactly, yeah.
And so I think that's something that's so important for people to understand in terms of this condition, that no side is ideal.
No side is good. Neither of them is fun. It's what I prefer, but that's still pretty bad.
Yeah. And from what I do understand from GPs, I know that the bipolar patients that tend to go off their medication, one of the main reasons is because they miss being manic.
I've been there. Oh, yeah.
And so what actually happens when you go off your medication?
So normally when I'm quite manic, I think to myself, I don't need the medication because I'm like cured.
Mm.
I feel great. I don't need the medication. I'm fine now. And then within about a couple of days, I will sink so low. And my boyfriend's always like, well, why did you come off your meds then? I'm like, I don't know. I'm sorry.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Now I'm like really depressed in my own filth. It's feeling really sad. Sorry for myself. So yeah, I really do not recommend coming off your meds unless it's advised by your GP.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would add to that you should always feel comfortable speaking to your GP.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And if you're not, ask speak to a different GP.
Find a new GP, yeah.
Because there's no harm in you bringing these concerns to them.
Oh, completely, yeah. They should understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And they deal with many people that will want to come off medication for all kinds of different reasons, including the side effects that often aren't talked about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But either way, they're not going to be shocked that you're considering coming off your medication.
No, they've had all before.
Exactly. And so they'll know what to do and they'll be able to talk you through that experience, because however you feel towards medication, and as Liv knows, we had a whole episode all about medication.
Go listen.
With her as the guest. However you feel about it, the doctors still care about your well-being.
Exactly, that your well-being comes first.
Yeah. And that's part of self-love too. Sometimes it is giving up the control and saying, maybe in this area I'm not the expert.
Yes. It's okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
Because that's part of self-love as well, like you said. It's like self-love. It's not just going, hey, I love myself. It's also caring about yourself and your mental well-being. If that means going on medication, that's okay.
Yeah, and it means different things to different people, and that's why there's quite a lot of crossover with self-love and self-care.
Yes.
In the same way, self-care means different things for different people.
Yep.
What works for one person won't necessarily for another.
Exactly.
It's the same with self-love, and sometimes that means that you need to go on a night out with friends, and sometimes that means you need to be away from everyone and just be there with
the book.
Absolutely, yeah. It depends on the person, mm-hmm. and I'm both of those.
Oh, yeah.
So, in terms of where you are now, are there any things that you find really powerful in terms of trying to build that self-love, even on your bad days?
I think I practice self-care a lot on my bad days because that's what gets me through the bad days. Self-care isn't just having a bubble bath. It's saying no to plans. It's going to bed a bit earlier. It's putting on a face of makeup and not doing anything all day, which I do all the time. It's amazing. Highly recommend it. It's eating a good meal. It's, you know, talking to a friend, a family member. Just whatever you do to make you feel that little bit better, do it.
It makes such a difference.
It does, yeah.
Because ultimately it's about prioritising you.
Exactly, yeah.
And one tool I find quite useful is trying to flip it. So if you think of what love means to you, we can have these double standards. So we will want to really look after someone else, but then we won't look after ourselves.
Yes, definitely.
And it's incredible how there can be that hypocrisy. And often it's the most caring people that seem to care for themselves least because they're so
definitely.
Busy looking after
everyone else. I heard someone say something that really kind of resonated with me. Something like, look at yourself the way you do at your best friend. You never look at your best friend and go, oh God, they're ugly, aren't they?
Mm.
So why would you do that to yourself? Treat yourself as your own best friend.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah.
You've actually reminded me of a double standard of mine because I have incredible friends and I think they're all attractive. I'm shallow enough and okay with myself enough to admit that appearance is a factor
in
friendship.
It is.
I think friendship is a lot nearer to romantic relationships than most people would like to admit.
Definitely.
So if you find someone to look at, you probably aren't going to want to be around them all the time, even just as a friend. And so I found that a good way of reminding me to not judge my own appearance because I think all my friends are attractive and have all these great physical traits, but they all look really different.
Yeah.
And yet then I'll, in the same breath, turn around at myself and be like, oh, but you're not this size or you're not this, you know, way.
Yeah.
And get really specific on things.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, oh, but that 2/3 of your friends don't fit that. And you still think they're great.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's sometimes difficult to admit to these things.
Yeah, definitely.
These ways that we can be our own worst enemy because somewhere in us we know that it's not right.
Yep.
But you need to because that's part of your growth.
Exactly.
You need to highlight these things. And that's something I learned through the podcast as well. I went into this experience thinking, I hate stigma. The stigma's over there and I'm over here. And with time I've learned that some of that I had internalized.
Yes, you do. You do.
And through having that experience, I've learned that and I've highlighted it. And just like you want to be honest about your bad days.
Yeah.
If I'm here on the podcast to destigmatize mental health and I notice I've got some stigma brewing in here, then I need to call it out.
Definitely, yeah.
I'd call it out in someone else.
Yeah, definitely.
And so we're coming near our time. But before we finish, I'd really love to hear, with all your experience and the wonderful community of people that follow you online, feverishly, like Annie from the podcast, are there any standout things, quotes, experiences you've gone through that you'd like to share?
Oh, one of my favourite quotes is, be the change you want to see in the world. I have a tattoo on my back. It's a reminder to be kind, and not only to other people, but to yourself as well, because you matter. And you may not think you do, but you really do. You're absolutely incredible and you're fucking amazing. Never doubt yourself. And be your own best friend, because that's so important, to love yourself as you would a best friend.
Mm-hmm. And I will trade with that one. I've got one that I've mentioned on the podcast before from Lisa Nichols, and she says, you need to be the example to the world on how to love you.
Yeah, I love that.
She's great.
That's a really good one, yeah.
So that's one that really resonates with me, because you've got to be that example. How could you ever tell somebody how to love you, if you don't have any fucking clue
exactly
how to look after you?
That's just ridiculous.
It is.
But I love that quote.
It is, but it's so common that, yeah, that people make that mistake.
Yeah,
and we can easily fall for thinking that if we look after everyone else, that's enough.
And it's not. You can't run on empty. Mm. You can't. What's that quote? You know,
you
what
can't
I mean?
Fill from an empty cup.
That's the one. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to me to end every episode by saying you are enough, because it may not be immediately obvious,
yeah,
how that relates to mental health, but actually, you understanding your worth and that you have the right to be mentally healthy.
Yeah.
You have the right to whatever support you need. You have the right to all the friends and positive family
influences,
relationships you can muster. Just for being alive, just for being a human, yeah, you have a right to all these
things. You've done enough. You're right.
And actually, unless you can prioritise you to a certain extent, there's no shortcut to recovery.
No. It's a lifetime thing, I think.
Yeah, and there's no way that you can go on hating yourself and not thinking you're worth help and then somehow get the help. You're just going to reject it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So for me, that really is at the core of mental health and the active part we as individuals can play.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a counsellor, but I can still prioritise myself and learn to understand that I'm worth the help.
Indeed, absolutely.
And so if people want to go and view all over their Instagram someone else who's worth all the support in the world, you.
Thanks.
Where can they find you?
So just type in self love live and you can't really miss me. I mean, I've got a pink background, wearing a top says girl gang, you know. Come find me, come say hello.
Super accessible. Yeah. I'll put a link to your Instagram in the description as well.
Thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you so much for being on the podcast again.
It's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks.
We've started a fundraiser to raise money for the work we do here at Mental Podcast, and also through our petition to get mental health education on the curriculum for all UK schools.
If you can chip in the cost of a fancy coffee, then head to bit.ly/mentalfund.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.